and it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR, arts and entertainment in our region, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming, welcoming once again Al Petrelli, music director for and lead guitarist with Trans-Siberian Orchestra, coming to the area soon with a tour of the Ghosts of Christmas Eve, with special attention paid to Beethoven's Last Night, as it's the 25th anniversary of that album. Now, whenever I interview anybody, I try to avoid questions that have been asked so many times, or at least try to ask it in a different way. Well, it's not always possible, especially when it comes to the song which led to Trans-Siberian Orchestra. Sorry, Al, this is one of the things that you will answer a million times. On Ghosts of Christmas Eve, you mentioned Christmas Eve Sarajevo, which came from the Savatage Dead Winter Dead. That's pretty much the beginning of TSO. If you could please share the story of this tune, and so important to note that where this tune was inspired from, you were actually there with Alice Cooper's band.
Yeah. Well, and this is a story that I'll never get tired of, especially, you know, speaking with you about it, because it was such a pivotal moment in my life that I was not aware of how pivotal it was at the time until years later. So I'm going to kind of jump forward a minute. Paul O'Neill, I met in 1985 in New York City. We became very good friends, and, you know, the gratuitous, hey, we got to work together one day conversation was always had in some random club or recording studio, pizza place in New York.
Yeah.
You know? And from 85 till about 95, you know, I was working a lot with a lot of different artists, you know, cutting my teeth, honing my skills. At the time, unbeknownst to me, that this was all preparation for what was to become Paul O'Neill World. Okay?
Yeah.
But 95, he called me up and he goes, I'm kind of at my wit's end, dude. Would you come in and help me out? He knew I was a big session player in New York. And I'm like, I'm going to come in and serve the song. And he put the faders up on the song that was to become Christmas Eve, Sarajevo, 1224. And I looked at him. And I was like, really, dude, a Christmas song? And he laughed. He goes, no, well, not really. He goes, it's kind of a soundtrack depicting events that took place on Christmas Eve during the war in Sarajevo. Not normally what a producer tells you before you start recording.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
Not the normal kind of rhetoric or conversation that's going to go on. So I was like, you got my attention. The short version of the story is, well, there was a classical musician who would go down to the town square and perform classical works by the great composers in protest to the bombing raids. And this was historically true. And he's describing it, and he looked at me and goes, what's the matter? And I said, you know, I was in that town square in 1990 when I was Alice's MD. You know, we played Zagreb and Belgrade before the war. And I had met a lot of people over there who were unfortunately killed during those events. I said, press record right now. And that's when that ostinato, boom, 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 boom. I said, cello here, God rest you. And the flute answers like the angels above, you know, that dichotomy of the two instruments. And we just kind of nailed it. And I remember at the end of it looking at him going, this is the most powerful, beautiful thing I've ever been part of. Thank you so much. I hope to God someday somebody hears this. And he goes, all I want to do is make great art. Wasn't concerned with commerce, wasn't concerned with commercials, didn't care less. I mean, legit, he didn't just say it, he did not care. He wanted to make a statement.
That's one of the beautiful things about Paul and his work is that, of course, he would be trying to do or write something successful, but it wasn't doing it to sell an album. He was trying to create art and a great storyline and something that interplayed between the people and the music and the words. And even songs which I've heard hundreds of times, I'm finding things new in them. And there's a song called Promises to Keep. This is kind of later in the storyline, but this line, if this kindness we feel is just pretending. And that's near the end of the song. It really caught me because it sounded at first like it's a falsehood, like we're pretending to be kind. But then the lines that follow, If we pretend long enough, never giving up, it just might be who we are. Yeah. And so it doesn't speak of a falsehood, but rather, let's make an effort, and then we can transform us and become genuine.
Yeah, because we're not programmed to be that, a lot of us. Yeah. You know, Christmas is a very, very bittersweet holiday for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But just like Paul said, you know, with the donation of a dollar per ticket, you know, it's a small, insignificant amount of money unless it's repeated over and over again. Same thing with the dreams. You know, what's the great Disney lyric? You know, a dream is a wish the heart makes every time you sleep.
Yeah.
You know? And Paul was a fantastic writer. One of my favorite lyrics he ever wrote, and I don't recall what song it was from, but something to the effect of, if I die first, can I be your ghost forever?
Oh, my gosh.
You know? Yeah, dude, he had a way of just saying it, you know? And I mean, I'll get emotional. We haven't done the song in a while, but anytime we play the song Ornament, and the ornament was kind of a symbolic of a child. There is an ornament lost inside the knife. There in the Christmas tree with 1,000 lights, you know, lost in there. And I don't know if I told you, but, you know, 2 of my 5 children are in the military. So when we play that song and they're deployed somewhere on whatever side of the planet they're deployed on, it may be soldiers and men and doing that, but they're my baby boys, you know. And I recorded that song when they were babies, my older kids, you know. And now 30-something years later, here we are. We're almost 30 years later since the release of that album, and they're grown men, you know. And part of Paul's genius was he was able to write that everybody could relate to. And I don't know if I told you that Leonard Bernstein had a fantastic quote regarding Beethoven, that his art was always accessible but never ordinary.
Mm.
And that's what made him so beloved by so many. You know, nothing was ever banal about what Paul O'Neill wrote, but everybody got it.
Nice. Music Box Blues. There's another line talking about the candle melting in the window in shattered glass. It's talking about keeping a candle lit for this young lost girl or the runaway. It could apply to either of the stories, in this case the lost one, but the candle is there for her to come home to see. But there's a point in the song that I'd never heard before, and this time it's near the beginning of the song. The candle wax is melted and it's shattered glass.
Yeah, melted dreams, yeah.
Yeah, so has she been lost for an entire year since the last holiday season?
I don't have an answer for you on that one. I apologize. I don't know because I was never given the timeline of when she left. And I think that that's what makes it so special is that in order for the audience to relate to that, again, missing somebody, the general sentiment inside of that, it doesn't matter if it's been 30 years or 3 days, you know, in Paul's world. It's just that the outcome is much more important than what led up to circumstance for her departure. You know, he never confided in me how long of a time frame, but that's really interesting that you're bringing that up. I never thought of it that way. I just know that he wasn't concerned with the prequel.
Right.
You know, he just wanted a Frank Capra-esque happy ending.
Yep. And that's something that we had talked about. And it's very true. You've said it before is that, you know, there was a fight, there was an argument, and what it was about, it doesn't matter so much. What matters is that the kid is gone. And the parents want her back, and she wants to come back. And so it's just really, oh gosh, I'm getting very emotional just talking about all this stuff with you. This happens every year.
How could you not? You know, I mean, because it's a relatable story. We all miss somebody.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, unfortunately, a lot of the times, we're not going to get a second swing at that plate for redemption. or to reach out. Maybe these people have passed on. You know, you and I have lived through this.
Yeah.
You know? And if you didn't have the wherewithal or the opportunity to maybe end the quarrel or to say I love you before, you know, it's very non-negotiable when you move on from this life.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's one of the secrets or the gems in Paul's writing. It's like, if you have the opportunity to do so, man, you know, just do it. If you can.
That's right.
But be aware, you know, because everybody misses somebody. There's an empty chair at everybody's dining room table, and there's no way around it, you know. But hopefully nothing was left unsaid prior to.
That's one of the things that's so common with so many people. We all have our family gatherings, and so many of us leave this one chair empty, this one plate at the table that nobody will sit at, but it's in remembrance. But
Listen, I pour a 25-year-old Macallan in a glass anytime we have a get-together that's not to be touched.
Yeah, totally.
That's in remembrance, you know? I mean, the neighborhood I came from, that's what we did, you know? There's an empty chair with it, you know, whatever it would be.
That's right.
Being very Italian, it was an uneaten cannoli. Now at my age, it'll be a glass of Macallan.
Oh, yeah, well, you can't have a... I've never heard of an uneaten cannoli.
Well, that's what I found out.
See, a cannoli, it's
the okay. This tribute ain't working out well for me because one of these little children would be, like, scoffing that thing up, and rightfully so.
I've got the lights upon the Christmas tree. I've got the candle lit for you to see. And beside this window, I will wait, for inside this night, I know it's not too late.
Let's talk a bit about Beethoven's Last Night. First of all, the music. Again, just like Ghosts of Christmas Eve, one could completely ignore the storyline and just get a really rocking album based off of some classical masterpieces. Now, we have maybe the most recognized. We mentioned already Requiem, fashioned after Beethoven's Fifth. But there's also so much in here. We get a bit of the first movement of the Moonlight Sonata and Ode to Joy. Sure. Here's the thing, though. Yes, and I'm trying to sort it out because it's not just Beethoven. We have some Mozart in there, and that's cool. Beethoven was indeed influenced by Mozart. But then we have Chopin, who came well after, and then even Rimsky-Korsakov, but we'll get to that. With Chopin and then these other artists other than Beethoven, how is it that this music is folded into the storyline? Again, I understand Mozart being there because there was influence and they actually met each other.
Yeah, there was influence. They met each other. You know, Paul beautifully tied that line in, you know, with the narration reciting the poetry about their relationships together as brothers, albeit, you know, years apart in age. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, again, I don't know that it was relationship-based with these other wonderful composers and their great works, or it was just like that's what Paul would hear in his head. You know, maybe he was foreshadowing events to come where Beethoven's great works led other composers that followed, you know. So a lot of it was just based on what fit here. I remember doing some of these songs, and that's when my reading chops really came to light. It's just like, good Lord Almighty.
Yeah.
You make me work today, brother. I'm just going to step out of the car for one moment and continue talking to you. And
if
you hear the pitch of my voice go up, that's because my angel just walked off the bus. You know, you never know what he was going to come up with. I mean, especially like the whole thing with the Fifth Symphony. I mean, probably one of the most recognizable themes ever put to paper.
Mm-hmm.
What a fantastic piece. Hey, baby, I'm on the phone with my friend David. Did you have a good day? I love you. Jumping across the street up. You know, when it comes to all these, listen, it was the Carillion Symphony. I'm not sure which one, one of Beethoven's symphonies that we had recorded later on, I think in From Letters of the Labyrinth. It was, he found these masterpieces, and I was just go, you know, you're really turning me into a fan of classical music, because I never really studied the great composers at length. I just obviously knew the more familiar pieces. But good Lord, he sent me down a rabbit hole where I must have 12, 13, 14 scores all over my studio in the basement and on my coffee table, much to my wife's chagrin, in the living room. You know, I mean, I just picked up Scheherazade.
Oh, wow.
Rimsky-Korsakov, Tchaikovsky's Sixth Symphony, Chopin, you know, his Prelude in E minor, the 28th opus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Paul taught me to dig deep and find richer harmony and mathematical relationships of melody and harmony to really further engage the audience. And I'm like, you know, he's the one who told me. He goes, by playing a certain series of notes over a certain chord, you can change the audience's mood and reaction.
Yeah. I'm David Fleming in conversation with Al Petrelli from Trans-Siberian Orchestra in the area, November 29th. More at trans-siberian.com. Back now with KVC Arts, I'm David Fleming. Trans-Siberian Orchestra is back in the region at the end of November, bringing us the Ghosts of Christmas Eve. It's also the 25th anniversary of Beethoven's Last Night, exploring some very familiar themes, some with the arrangement of a medley, though it's so much more than that. Sometimes it is just the feel, because the first time I listened to A Last Illusion, where it starts off with a gentle approach to Ode to Joy, but then we get to... it's either Rimsky-Korsakov or it's something meant to invoke Flight of the Bumblebee.
Actually, yeah, no, it was Flight of the Bumblebee.
Okay.
And then,
okay.
You know, surrounded by a bunch of other stuff. And then into the Ninth Symphony at the end.
Right. Going back to, well, the bigger, the Ode to Joy, yeah. The Ninth Symphony, yeah. So speaking of the Ninth, which makes me want to say speaking of the Tenth, how about a synopsis about what Beethoven's Last Night is? Because it's a cool story, and I beg you to tell the story of the trick played upon him on the end about his, let's say, his first son.
Well, the long and the short of it is that the devil wants Beethoven's soul, you know, firstborn child of his parents, in exchange for the elusive 10th symphony. And, you know, I didn't even really pay attention to the story that much when we were recording it. I had my hands full trying to record that thing, to say the least.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, you know, and Paul pulls this out of his hat where, like, Ludwig von Beethoven, you want the firstborn soul, you could have him, because he had a baby brother who died at childbirth. So the 10th symphony was forever hidden, and, you know, Mephistopheles never got his paws on it, and Beethoven was not slave to that, and spent his last evening, like the song depicts, lay your head asleep on my pillow and have your final dream. It's okay. Life is good now. You're fine. Your soul is intact, and you beat the devil. And when I finally got it, I looked at it, it was like, so it's like Charlie Daniels, the devil went down to Georgia, is that what we're talking about? And he's like, no, not even close.
Oh, come on, Paul, that was actually fair. That's a fair comparison.
That's all I got. You know, the old Robert Johnson story.
There it is, yes, old scratch at the crossroads, certainly.
Yeah.
Do you happen to know, was it a historic fact that this was on the night of Beethoven's, his last night on Earth, this really the biggest lightning storm? Or was this just a wonderful literary device?
I've heard both.
Okay, yeah.
And to be honest with you, it's a great story, and I'll take that. And if we repeat the story long enough, you know, if we pretend long enough, it becomes the truth, right?
That's right.
But here's a definite fact, is that we played Vienna. We played Beethoven's Last Night in Vienna on the anniversary of Beethoven's death, which I don't know that they booked it in such regard, but that's where the routing landed. And when I found out, I was like, we're playing in his hometown in this however hundreds of year old building, whatever it is. And we're playing this collection of music to a discerning audience in Vienna. We might get run out of Dodge. And again, we were received with a standing ovation.
It was like 30 million people, if I'm not mistaken.
Dude, it was just like, this is really dangerous. And Paul said, let's just do what we do.
Yeah. And I thought a 10,000 arena seat was big, but okay.
Oh, 1 million people to Brandenburg Gates was another half a heart attack.
Oh, good God.
And on New Year's Eve, you know?
Wow.
I mean, and fortunately, you know, the older I get, the less I could see far. So I don't know how many people are here any longer. You know, without my glasses on, I'm like, I'm just going to play and have fun. But when you hear the crowd react to, you know, Paul's work, that's the big payoff.
Nice.
You know, and especially we're going on decades.
Oh, my gosh.
No joke. Listen, my oldest son was born when we were doing the photo shoot for the Dead Winter Dead record, which was July of 95. And my oldest son was like 7 or 8 years old when I was recording that record. You know, now they're 30 years and change older.
something I have to get at least a light touch on. Someone will always bring up, so when's Sabotage going to perform again, man? And okay, and so there was actually indeed. Why did I just imitate some metalhead there? Well, anyway.
It was a good way to get into the conversation.
Thank you. Well, that's how I was raised. There was indeed a world tour this year, which you were a part of.
Yes,
and perhaps now I've heard hints of a new album out next year. Has there been any recording on that yet?
Yes, comma, no. There's an unbelievable amount of unfinished material that Paul had written with John Oliva. One or two things that I had written with Paul O'Neill and John Oliva. We had gotten together. We did a wonderful tour this past spring and summer in South America and all of Europe. And we were down there. We were kicking the tires on a couple of the old riffs. You know, part of me would love to do it. And then part of me goes, but Paul's not here. You know, he had final say. That's why those records are those records. So I'll speak for myself. I could never in a million years step into his shoes and do what he did. You know, he had a certain genius for arranging and production and knowing when it was enough, you know, or when it needed more. We keep talking about releasing new material. You know, if I was lying to you, I'd say, yeah, you know, next year or so. But I don't have an answer for you because I don't know that it will come to fruition, although everybody would love it to.
Sure. I think John was hinting at it a few years ago, but there were also health issues. So that, you know, so, well, let me ask this, perhaps. There's a big difference between the earlier or the earliest of Sabotage and the band after Paul O'Neill's influence. Do you know if you guys would want it to be some sort of Hall of the Mountain King, Wake of Magellan kind of epic concept album kind of thing, harkening back to Paul? Or is that like, we're not doing this without Paul, so it's kind of stepping back a few steps?
Probably a little bit of both, you know. Okay. First of all, I don't know that we could do it without Paul. I certainly don't possess that talent to do that. And at the same time, if you look at the trajectory that started with John, Chris Oliva, and then Paul's involvement, you know, with Hall of the Mountain King and Streets, and, you know, The Wake of Magellan, Dead Winter Dead, and even Poets and Madman.
Yes.
You know, and he just kept pushing the envelope. It became more vicious and more dramatic and, you know, more soundtrack, you know. I would certainly not want to go backwards because what would that tell of us?
Yeah.
You know, it's like Mike Tyson going into the ring, you know, against whoever he fought in an exhibition a while ago. Okay. Mm. I'd like the legacy to stand where it was left unless we could outdo that. Now, if we could ever outdo it, good Lord.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't think so. You can't outdo Paul O'Neill at Paul O'Neill.
No,
not going to happen. So where would it go? You know, and that's the question that everybody goes. Certainly we could rehearse a couple of new ideas and kick the tires on some new things. But to be honest with you, the task at hand between the winter tour and now what's going to be Sabotage spring and summer tours for hopefully the next 10 or 12 years, I'm okay with just that, with celebrating the work that exists, because I was overwhelmed by this reaction to Sabotage when we went out and toured this last year. It was absolutely incredible. And, you know, when the audience is singing louder than the band is playing, I forgot about this, dude. So with that reaction, I'm good with riding off into the sunset with this group of amazing musicians. I was so proud of all of them, the job that they did, how it was received by audiences all over the world. You know, and that's a testament to the catalog that John Oliva and Paul O'Neill has left us.
Nice.
You know, these songs, like just last week, I went to see Gladys Knight, Patti LaBelle, and Chaka Khan.
Oh, wow.
They're touring as the four queens, and I'm spacing who the fourth woman artist was. I apologize. But, you know, there's people in the audience that are, I don't know, 15, 16 years old, but singing every lyric to these songs.
Yeah.
And going like, you know, Ain't Nobody by Chaka Khan, or Tell Me Something Good, or Patti LaBelle, you know, On My Own, or certainly Gladys Knight, who's the soundtrack of my life, doing If I Were You a Woman, or You're the Best Thing That Ever Happened, and like, you know, 10,000 people like crying and singing along. It's like, that's the power of a song and a performance. And I'm grateful to still be part of that twice a year now.
Beautiful. Oh, that's so incredible, Al. I love being able to speak with you about these things because I hear these little bits with Chaka Khan. Chaka Khan. I can never say her name just once.
Yes. Well, you know, listen, being a kid in the 60s and 70s, and R&B and Motown, you know, I mean, that was 50, 60% of what was being played on the radio back then. And I could tell you that I remember listening to Gladys Knight's You're the Best Thing That Ever Happened to Me when one of my uncles came home from Vietnam in 1973. And I remember being at the welcome home party, you know. And so music... It's funny how music and the sense of smell will transport you back in time immediately. You know? And hearing these songs and watching. Now, fast forwarding however many decades it's been, and now I'm on stage performing songs, that some of which are 30 years old. And there's three generations of people in the audience, and, you know, there's kids out there who weren't born, you know, never mind when we were recording stuff, they weren't born, you know, 10, 12 years ago. I got kids in the band who weren't born when we started recording, you know? Yet we're all there for a purpose, which is serving the song and celebrating Paul O'Neill's work. That I'm so grateful, and I'll always say this to you, my friend, I was so grateful to be part of that. Very lucky to be given that opportunity and seizing the opportunity, knowing that this dude is onto something very, very special. 21 yeah. million tickets later, we sold. You know, think about that.
And that means $21 million going to local charities as well, at least $21 million. So yeah. it's an incredible
thing. He told me years ago, I remember it was opening night at the Tower Theater in Philly, we're going to donate $1 from every ticket sold, okay, because I want to make a difference. And he was that dude who was not talking about making a difference. He's making a difference now. And a dollar doesn't sound like a lot of money. It's like when we were kids and Santa used to be in front of the grocery store ringing the bell with the big, you know, black kettle.
Yes.
And what'd you do? You threw whatever change you had in your pocket.
Yeah.
Not going to make a difference in my world necessarily. But when you add up that collective offering, here we are, $21 million. My daughter's decided she wants to try to stick a screwdriver through my newly resurfaced blacktop driveway. That's a problem, right?
Is it fresh?
What do you do
still
in your
soft?
Off time? Guess what?
Get screwdrivers out of the driveway.
I don't know which is in more trouble, the screwdriver or the driveway, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, yeah. I'll let you go on that one. This is just beautiful once again. I look forward to it every year. And
as do I, my friend. I always enjoy our time together.
I will see you soon, and looking forward to it year after year. I love it.
As do I, my brother. Thanks so much for the time, and all my love to you and the family, and I'll see you soon.
Thank you so much. Back to you and yours as well. For this edition of KVCR, it's been conversation with Al Petrelli and music from Trans-Siberian Orchestra for the most part, though we got just a bit of Savatage as well. Trans-Siberian Orchestra is back in Anaheim for two shows November 29th. More at trans-siberian.com and more on Savatage at savatage.com. That's S-A-V-A-T-A-G-E. Savatage.com. And with that, we wrap up another edition of KVC Arts. Thanks again to Al Petrelli, and here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Sandy Hodela, Adam Rainey Ruiz, Paige Chivers, and Sharina Wad. Many past shows can be found through Spotify, iTunes, NPR One, or many other podcast sites, and most past shows are at kvcrnews.org/arts. Music beds and themes heard on KVC Arts, composed and performed by Sean Longstreet. So thanks to Sean as well. I'm David Fleming. Thanks especially to you for listening and for your support. Please give any time, day or night, at kvcrnews.org/support. And thank you so much.